All right, good morning, creators. Welcome to another episode of the Media 1099 podcast. My name is Michael Durr, and I'm here with my co-host Robert Husky talking freelance strategy in 2020. We just wrapped up our May interview with the amazing athletic photographer, B. Trofert. Robert, how are you this morning, and what were your takeaways?
Good. I'm good, Mike. Hope you're doing well. It was a great interview. Probably like the biggest takeaway for me is her effective use of this quarantine lockdown time. You know, she started her Skillshare page, she started a workshop, and she goes through that process. And it was just like, oh, wow, she's been wanting to do these things for a while. Now she's forced to have this free time. And then she capitalizes on it and jumps on it. And for me, I was like, oh, that's really impressive to just go out there and go do that.
Yeah,
how about yourself?
It's similar. I mean, I was just blown away how capable and competent she was. Not that I assumed that she wasn't. It's just she's got this tenacity about her to deliver, and she's so productive. And you could even tell in the interview because, you know, yes, we talked about fitness photography. Yes, we talked about some of the kind of crafting of that. But a lot of it was, how did you get to this point? And what was that process was like going through college and then, you know, building your glam team early on. And then when she was traveling right out of college, going on jobs, and then also prospecting while she was on jobs so that she could have her bi-coastal teams going. Like, it just showed a lot of vision, not only artistically, but just for her career-wise. So I just thought, this is a very capable person, so that when, yes, quarantine, like you said, comes around, and then it's like, oh, well, now would be the perfect time to set up my online workshop and do these things. She doesn't have to workshop it for 6 months or a year. She can launch it right away. So I was just blown away by her tenacity and her capability.
Yeah, I think that was really impressive. And how she talks about her overcoming fears, you know, and how she's just like, okay, just do it. Like, take your own advice. Like, you always tell people, just do it, just do it. And then she finally gets over that hurdle and does it.
You know, I did laugh to myself when she mentioned it, and when you'll hear the interview about just keeping it simple and not overthinking things. You and I have this conversation all the time. I mean, I feel like you tell me to stop overthinking things at least once a week. So it just made me laugh, and I was like, yeah, I'm getting in my own way. So it was really good advice for me to hear as well, just from somebody that I admire.
Yeah. I hope you guys enjoy the episode. You'll hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll hop right back in.
All right, good day to everyone tuning in. I get so excited for every interview we do, but today really is a special one. We are diving in on building your athletic and fitness photography brand, and I can't think of a better person to help us out with that. She is an exceptional photographer, a Photoshop guru, and Paul C. Buff ambassador. Joining us from DC today, the wonderful B. Alyssa Trofert. Thank you so much for being here, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, B. So I got to start with the elephant in the room. How is this quarantine lockdown treating you? What's your current situation?
At this point, I'm over it. I'm so ready to create again. I'm so ready to shoot outside again. Every time I'm being very, very inspired and very motivated. And I found other ways to keep myself busy by doing my Be Fearless and Create workshop series, as well as doing mentoring sessions and online tutorials. But now I'm just ready to get my hands dirty again.
Yeah, sticking on that, you know, that the Be Fearless online workshops, which I know you've done already, is it 2 series?
Yeah, so actually this week, the second series is happening right now.
Okay, gotcha. And hopefully we'll be able to publish this before it ends to promote that. But what has that experience been like collaborating with your kind of fellow artists and having that platform during quarantine?
It's been so amazing. I know personally for me, it's given me something to look forward to every single day, to be able to network with other creatives, as well as to be able to share our knowledge. You know, sometimes it gets to the point as a creative where everything is just second nature to us, where we don't think about our process. We don't think about what we're doing because we've been doing it for so long. But now we're in the position of understanding that there's a lot of people out there that haven't got to that second nature yet. So it's our job and it's our duty to be able to inspire, to motivate, and to share our process with them, and then allow them to learn from it. So far it's been an amazing experience. Everyone's looking forward to it. Everyone's been giving us amazing feedback. So I'm definitely looking forward to continue it throughout the rest of the year.
Do you have a link for that?
Yes. Yeah,
so it's in the show notes.
Yep. It's befearlessstudios.com.
Awesome. To kind of dig in on that, what was the process like, you know, starting it and maybe reaching out to the other present people that are presenting, because I've never done something like that. And I think taking this first step is amazing, but also has some difficulties with it.
Oh, for sure. Definitely for me personally, not having anything to do during this quarantine, I was like, okay, you know, if I'm feeling this way, I wonder if other creatives are feeling that way as well. So I started to reach out to people that I've either worked on with projects, and I'm just like, hey guys, I have this idea. Just want to know if you'll be interested in it. And since everyone is stuck at home, they were so happy to jump on the opportunity to have something to do, to have something to work towards, to have something to look forward to. So it was one of those, and it was crazy because at first I was very hesitant, like, maybe they won't like the idea. Maybe they don't want to do it. And then some people were very hesitant because a lot of us aren't teachers or educators. You know, a lot of us are just creative. So we never put ourselves in that atmosphere. And even for me, it was me getting out of my comfort zone and actually being in front of a camera and teaching a workshop and teaching a class. And it ended up being an amazing experience. And a lot of the creatives actually were able to start their own mentoring programs after that. So it's been a very, very good experience.
Yeah, sticking on that, I know that you and I kind of talked briefly the other day about how you kind of grew up somewhat shy and introverted.
Yes.
And so for someone who now seems so comfortable in her skin and energetic on set and running these leaderships, what do you think were some of the watershed moments for you in developing a stronger leadership voice?
Definitely being more confident. You know, it's one of those things where as an artist, it's easy for you to be your toughest critic. So you never think you're good enough. You always think your project could be better. You always think all these different things. And I had to get to the point for myself with understanding my journey, understanding my process, and actually understanding that this is a part of me becoming who I need to be as not just an artist, but as a businesswoman and as a current leader, so to speak. And for me, it was just me getting more comfortable with putting myself in uncomfortable situations. And I have a lot of mentors that are always pushing me and always telling me, you know, success doesn't come from your comfort zone. So keep pushing and keep finding yourself out there. And actually last year, I got the opportunity to do a speaking engagement in front of over 100 people. And it was talking about photography and business. And I was terrified. And when the person asked me, I wanted to say no. And my twin sister was like, you always talk about getting out your comfort zone. So this could be your first step. And I was terrified. I was shaking. I was nervous. But as soon as I got up there and I just start speaking, when you realize that you know what you're talking about, it makes it so much easier. But it's about putting yourself in that position to actually test out that theory and to really push yourself further so you can know that, hey, I can actually do this if I try, if I put my mind to it, and if I take that step out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how you kind of slowed that inner monologue of just kind of anxiety and fear, because I just did this yesterday too. I did my first like Zoom presentation, and I felt the anxiety. I could feel my heart rate just kind of going at like a million miles a second. Is there anything that you've learned through your presentations, through being an ambassador, through these tutorials that you think has really helped you slow your anxiety down?
I've learned to stop overthinking. That's okay. Been one of the biggest things where even like with my workshops, I will find myself in the shower talking about, okay, how I'm going to present this, how am I going to introduce this person? And then I got to the point where I just made it a game and I would just like laugh at myself. I'm like, you're really in the mirror doing all this. And I never say anything that I practice, you know? Right. So I just got to the point where it's just like, you know what, stop overthinking, stop overanalyzing, because the more that you think about it, the more that you dwell on it, you start to get that anxiety. You start to get that fear starts to creep in. And I start to tell myself, you know what, if I mess up, I mess up, but hey, we're all human. So, and it shows everyone else that you're human as well. So when you stop overanalyzing, stop overthinking and stop putting that pressure on yourself and just, hey, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be myself. And I hope that they accept that. That's ultimately what always ends up happening. They're going to accept you for you being you. And you just have to trust and believe that you are good enough.
Kind of pushing in on that a little bit, were there any hiccups that you encountered during either your first big presentation in front of that crowd or during your Be Fearless and Create seminar?
Yeah, my computer crashed in the middle of it. And luckily my sister was there, and it was me and another teacher. So luckily I was just able to pull up her computer, my sister's computer, and just get things going, and no one knew what happened, thank God. But it was one of those things where I had to realize, you know, hey, we're going to have technical issues, and like some people were having trouble logging in. There's things that sometimes are out of your control, and I just have to realize, you know, control control what I can control and what I can't control, just, hey, don't stress it.
You wrote in a blog post recently that now is kind of like a perfect time to give your clients reassurance. Could you elaborate on what that means to you and like how you go about doing that?
So for me, it's really, you know, in this time, I feel like we all are in this predicament, me especially speaking for myself, to where we're worried, we're concerned, we don't know what's to come, we don't know what the future is supposed to look like. And it's one of those things where I have to realize, you know, my clients aren't just my clients, they're people as well. They're people I associate with, they're people that I've been able to photograph their families, or I've been able to be a part of their journey, whether it's their sports, whether it's their competitions. So just to reassure them, like, hey, you know, we're all are going through this whole difficult time together, but just know that things are going to come from this in ways that we don't expect and in ways that we don't imagine, but to always think about the positive and, you know, to always look forward to us being able to reconnect, to recreate, because I've had a lot of jobs that have been postponed or just canceled indefinitely. And a lot of people have gone to that point where they're worried or they're stressed or everything like that. And it's like, you know, when the time comes, when the doors open back up, we'll all be ready. We'll all be in a position. And, you know, I always say that things work out the way that they're supposed to work out. You know, so in this process, you know, some people may be in a better mental space when it comes to shooting. Some people may be in a better physical space. So just reassuring, like, you know, hey, use this time, use this process to build, to work on yourself, to focus on your mental health, to focus on your physical health, to focus on whatever it is that you've been afraid to attack. And then when we're able to actually go back outside and reconvene, what we create is going to be magical.
So have you been reaching out to these clients like via email, text message, phone calls? What's kind of been your idea going forward?
Each one has been different. Some have been emails, some have been DMs on Instagram. Like if I see them post something, like just remind them like, hey, you know, I'm seeing what you're doing out there. You know, everyone loves that reassurance, especially in that time, mm-hmm. you know, as well yeah. as I've been. And then some people I've actually just got on the phone with and just had a conversation like, hey, how's it going on your end? You know, and just being able to be personable, because I think a lot of us, we tend to forget that some people just need a listening ear. You know, especially for me as a creative, I started reaching out to my other friends that are creatives like, hey, what's really going on your end? Because I know for me, my mental space has been doing this, has been doing that. But then when you're able to shed that skin and when you're able to shed light on things that people are, you know, afraid to speak about and afraid to talk about, it lets everyone else know that, like, hey, we're all going through the situation and it's okay to work on it and to get through it together.
Yeah, when this whole COVID thing started, I started getting, you know, emails of clients canceling or postponing. And then I was like just back and forth, like, oh, hey, like totally understandable. Everyone's going through this, like, don't worry. And then I've been kind of touching up, like you said, just like, hey, like, it's nice to see that you guys are still posting and using stuff. Like, it's really encouraging. And you're right. I have been recently just talking and texting to some of my other colleagues, like other freelancers, and like, hey man, like, you all doing all right? You ready to get a coffee when this thing's over?
Right.
You know, and just having that little support and like love really helps you keep moving forward in this weird situation.
Yes. And it definitely reminds you of how strong your network is, you know, because when you're able to reconnect with everyone, especially on this level, right now it feels like it's a more intimate connection that you're having with your colleagues and with your clients, you know, and that's the thing that's going to keep that relationship staying longer and going to keep it to continue to grow.
Staying on that, talk to me about your network. Like, how did you establish your creative team with your makeup artist, your stylist? I'm sure you end up associating with a lot of familiar people. How did you build that?
It's been a journey. So I've lived in a lot of cities. So, should I start from the beginning? Should I just give an overall?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, start from the beginning.
So I actually went to college for photography and film. So back in college was when I actually started doing my photo shoots and working with my classmates and getting critiques and everything like that. And from there, I started finding people that were interested in, like, I would collaborate with someone who was in the fashion department and like, hey, can we collaborate on this photo shoot? Because my fashion sense isn't really there. And then from there, I was able to learn how to actually work with the team. And then I found a makeup artist on who actually did the makeup for one of the events at our school. And I just contacted her. I walked up to her and was like, hey, I'm a photography major. I would love to collaborate with you. And then from there, it gave me the experience of actually collaborating and working as a team. Because usually it's easy for us to just think about, okay, I just have to do everything on my own. But then you can actually realize, well, if I want it to look like this or I want it to look like that, I actually need a team. I need a wardrobe stylist, a makeup artist, a hairstylist, all of those different things. So then post-graduation, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, where I began interning and assisting photographers, where they really showed me the need of having a team, from not just having your glam squad, but actually having assistants and having a digital tech and all those different things. And me moving to a new city, I was staying on my cousin's couch trying to figure out this life as an artist. And I just started going on Craigslist. And I would just go on Craigslist and find people that were like putting out if they want to be a wardrobe stylist or things like that. And then even with my internships and assisting, I started to meet the other photographers that were there who had their own teams, or the makeup artists who had their assistants. And I just started networking and just started communicating with everyone like, hey, you know, I'm assisting this photographer, but one day I want to be in his shoes, you know? And from there, I've just been able to build my network and build my my team. So I have a team right now in Atlanta. I have a team in LA, and now I have my go-to people. And then people usually will contact me interested in wanting to collaborate. And then there's a couple of projects where I just love to give people opportunities and new chance, because you never know what they're going to bring to your project, as well as you never know if that's going to be a relationship you want to keep.
So kind of picking off on that, from Atlanta to LA, how do you juggle between it, you know, that big of a gap in the country of working back and forth?
A lot of red eye flights. Yeah, it's really been so. Before I moved to LA, I actually was living in Atlanta full time, and I started doing a project in 2016 with an Olympian during her retirement year. And she lived out in LA. So I was flying back to LA back and forth like every 2 months working with her. And during my time there, not only was I working with her, but I was networking and collaborating with other people. So I was finding photographers that were out there and I was assisting them. And I was doing my own side, like test shoots with fitness models, and just finding a different way to be able to create another clientele base while I'm out there. And then it got to the point where I was getting called out there for jobs. And I was like, okay, perfect. Now let me start really branching myself as more of bi-coastal, being that I'm able to go back and forth and being able to continue to expand my clientele on both sides. And then from there, I would always just, based on my travel schedule, is how I would just do my booking schedule. So if I know I'm going to be in LA for these 2 weeks, or if I'm going to be in Atlanta for these 2 weeks, I would usually send out not an email blast, but to a lot of my clients that are recurring clients that like to photograph monthly or bi-monthly, I would just send them out my dates, and then I'll just plan accordingly, and to be able to make the travel worth the travel, worth the time, and making sure that I'm able to get all of my clients' needs done in an accurate time.
That sounds like that's a lot of work going through that and just learning that information on the fly, because I'm sure nobody really necessarily taught you how to manage that schedule. What was that process like?
It was difficult. It was very tough because, you know, especially as a freelancer, you want to say yes to every job. And then I had to realize, my mom was always telling me, you know, you have not to, she wouldn't tell me to slow down, because I would be like, no, I'm not slowing down. But then it made me think, okay, you know, you have to start planning ahead and start scheduling things better. Because when you actually have a plan, when I can look at my calendar and say, okay, well, I know in this month I'm going to be there this date, in these months I'm going to be here this date, then it's easier to plan ahead. It's easier to get your schedule or to give your clients the dates that need to be sent over to them. So it was a lot of trial and error. It was a lot of me having to pass on jobs to other people because I was unavailable or different things like that. And then I was like, okay, you know what? If I want to be available, I have to plan my schedule accordingly, and I have to be in more control of my time and my travel.
So jumping in on that, how have you added your Skillshare videos into that already seemingly crazy schedule?
Actually, the Skillshare videos came because of this quarantine. Okay. Yeah, so I always wanted to do tutorials, and people would always send me messages or emails about editing and everything like that. And I always said that I was going to do it, but it was one of those things like, oh, I hate hearing myself talk, and I don't know how this is going to work out. And then due to this quarantine, I was like, you know what? This has been on my to-do list for a long period of time. Let me just dive into it. And then when I started doing it, I started enjoying it. And I was like, hey, this actually isn't bad. So I would like make a list of what topics I want to cover. And then I would shoot multiple in a day so that I'm able to have enough content to go out through each week and then keep it going from there. And then whenever a topic comes to mind, I'll either do it right then, or if I'm editing a project like, hey, this could be a good thing to talk about, then I'll just do it that way. And then from there, it just led on to everything.
How do you choose what topic you're going to talk about and create a video for?
Usually it's based on what I'm editing, or it's based on what I think people need. Because when I see other younger photographers, when they will send me their page or send me their work, like for instance, the video I just released yesterday was how to smooth the background in your studio image. And I decided to do that video because a lot of, when I was working with a lot of college students and mentoring, and they'll show me their work, a lot of them had a wrinkly background. And you know, what's the best way to do it is to fix it in Photoshop. So I was like, okay, well, perfect. That'll be a great tool that I know a lot of people can utilize. And it always just makes me think about, okay, for each video, what is something that someone actually wants to learn, or what is there a need for? And what is there a need for people that aren't just professional photographers, but people that are bloggers, people that create their own flyers? What are just different things that they can actually utilize? So I'm not just focusing solely on photographers, but content creators as a whole, since a lot of people like to be the jack of all trades and like to edit their own work and put their work in Canva to create their flyers. I can now show them how they can use different tools that they can use at home to actually make their images pop.
With the addition of Skillshare and Be Fearless and Create, do you see kind of this semi-passive different income stream becoming more prevalent in your career moving forward?
Yes. And the crazy thing is this quarantine got me to the point where I actually understood my purpose. Because one of the things I always look back on when I'm speaking with people about my experience, I've had a blessed experience. I've been able to go to a magnet art school in middle school and high school, to where in high school I was working in the dark room. I had I was working with Photoshop Elements. And then during summer school, I was interning in the Bahamas. My uncle owned a photography studio. So there during the summers while I was in high school, I was working in the Bahamas at a photography studio, touching and editing photos. And then when I went to college, I had the opportunity to work with equipment, to work in a studio, to work with all these strobe lights and all these different things. And for me, understanding how there's a lot of people that don't have access to that, I realized that my purpose is not just to create amazing work, but to be able to provide others with the resources that I've been blessed with. So that was one of the things that really pushed this whole Be Fearless and Create, is I don't want anyone to have any more excuses, because now I want to be able to create a space where you're able to get these resources from me opening up my own studio space, to where we can have a computer lab with Photoshop so students can come in and they can edit their projects and they can do the different online tutorials, to where we can do live Be Fearless and Create workshop series where we have people in person showing you these things hands-on, and really being able to create something that will continue to grow and that will be able to educate people all over the world.
That sounds really great. I would imagine that you received so much great advice through your upbringing. Between, you know, middle school, high school, college, your internships, what do you think is the best piece of advice that you ever got?
A couple. So funny thing is, I come from a Caribbean background. So me wanting to go into photography was not the best conversation to have with my parents and my family. They're like, you want to do what? You know, and it just got to the point where I remember I was outside with my mom and I had this conversation with her, and I was like, this is what I want to do and it's all going to work out. Trust me, like, I'm not going to put your money to waste. It's all going to work out. I'm going to be successful. Just have faith in me. And after that conversation, I got a scholarship to the school. I was able to get multiple scholarships, was on the honor roll, was able to get internships with People Magazine, with different things. And a lot of things just started to come from it. But one of the biggest things, advice I got in college, which has gotten me to where I am today, is my professor. His name is Shane Rochelot. He challenged us our sophomore year to photograph what our fear was. And because I was shy, my fear was photographing people. Because my portfolio, if I show you guys my portfolio, it was like, I was photographing abandoned houses and like urban landscapes and like anything I could just walk around and just go up and photograph, you know? And I always just feared speaking to people. And so we did a whole semester long project. He made me do a whole semester long project photographing strangers in Richmond, Virginia, where my college was. And it was the best, worst experience ever. And then it was the worst experience ever. And then from there, he was like, you know, what is your passion? What are you passionate about? And I love sports. I played basketball my whole life. Basketball was the way that me and a lot of my cousins were able to build our bond, because I would be the Tom girl playing basketball with the boys and everything like that. So that alone allowed me to understand and allowed me to realize how I can use my craft to actually pursue my passion in a different way. So I would always tell people, you know, face your fears, especially if your fear is going to take you to that next step in your craft and in your career. Because I never would have imagined that I'm shooting the things I'm shooting now if I didn't get out my comfort zone and if I didn't face my fear of talking to strangers. Because now I talk to strangers on a daily basis and I'm more comfortable doing it because my professor forced me to get out there and photograph strangers.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so I'm interested to kind of dive in onto how you found that niche. So athletics were obviously big impact to you growing up.
Yes.
What made you go more towards that portrait fitness commercial route as opposed to just covering sports, the games?
So when I was in college, I did a lot of internships. My college didn't require us to take internships. I'm not sure why. But for me, I wanted to know, okay, if I'm doing this major, what are all the different job opportunities that I can get out there to be a successful photographer? So I interned with a local studio where we would photograph weddings, we would photograph corporate headshots. And then from there, I interned with a local newspaper who had me photographing events around the city. Then I interned with a local magazine who had me photograph events or do food photography for local restaurants. And then I interned with, during the summers, I would go to New York and I was interning with People Magazine 1 year. I was interning with some commercial photographers the next year and just finding out, you know, okay, you can be a photo editor, you can be a photo researcher, you can do weddings, you can do all these different things. And then I started interning with the sports photographer for VCU that did all of the branding work for University of Richmond and Virginia Commonwealth University. So he was photographing the games, but he was also creating the content that they would use for the flyers and for the billboards and for all these different things. So those were in-studio portraits. So after seeing his work and after assisting him and interning with him, it made me more curious, like, okay, well, I can photograph games because I can read a play, I can read what's about to happen. But if me being able to go into the studio and control that setting and control the atmosphere, I loved having that control. I love being able to control the lighting. I love being able to control the wardrobe. So it allowed me to focus and dive in more. Okay, hey, let me start experimenting more with these. Let me see what I see in Sports Illustrated. If I can recreate this with a basketball player, if I could recreate this with a track and field athlete. And it was just one of those things where I just kept playing around. I kept experimenting while I was still shooting games as well. And as much as I enjoyed shooting games, like I said, I didn't have control. I didn't have that control of being able to create a mood, being able to create a theme, being able to create an idea. And from there, I just started focusing more on diving more into that and diving more to that intimate setting with the athlete to be able to create art.
So kind of to push it to your technique a little bit, on your portfolio, you have a lot of amazing work, by the way, just quick shout out.
Thank you.
But you have, it seems like there's always motion in it and there's a lot of color. When you're coming up with these concepts, are you doing a lot of test shots beforehand to make sure things are like perfect as can be? Or are you going in kind of just with an idea in mind?
Usually it's both. Some of them I have just had an idea. It's like, hey, we're going to do what the client wants or what the subject wants. But then at the end, I'm like, hey, now that we've gotten all these images, let's try this. And usually it's the let's try this that end up being some of everyone's favorites.
Mm-hmm. So with a lot of the images, there's, like I was saying, motion. Is this done in post, or is this kind of like a in-camera trick where you're using maybe multiple exposures or different flash durations?
It's
very stunning.
It's all in camera. It's all in camera. So the first one I actually did it in Photoshop. And then I got mad at myself when I was editing and I'm like, hey, you know, my one of my professors would always say that photography, well, I can't remember the exact quote. I think it was like photography should only be a crutch, but not I butchered that quote. But he would always say that we shouldn't rely on Photoshop to do all of our effects and everything like that. So when he said that, I was like, you know what? Okay, let me think about it. How can I actually create this motion? And then I remembered that I did practice long exposure in college. So then I just called up one of my friends who was a model. And I said, hey, I have this idea. I would love to practice this idea with you. And we spent probably like 2 to 3 hours just working on multiple exposure, working on long exposure, really just playing with the constant light, playing with the flash trigger, playing with like the different durations and color gels. And then from there, I was able to understand, okay, this is how lighting and the camera's working and how the movements will work. And then from there, I just started doing more and more of them.
Yeah, that's interesting. So like, you know, between your long exposures using colored gels, whatever experimentations and iterations you were going through, like which areas kind of gave you the most trouble? What were like the sense of like difficulty for you to master one of these processes?
The long exposure was difficult. It was the most difficult because it's so intricate, and especially with I had to really understand how every little thing counts, every little motion, every little thing. And it made me realize how to have more control of the movement. Even like with my subjects, whenever I'm doing the long exposures, I'm basically directing every single movement in every shot. So if I'm telling them, okay, after this, you're going to move forward and you're going to do this and then hold it. And then even throughout the entire series, I'm literally directing every single thing so that I know that I'm getting the image that I'm looking for, because it's so easy to, you know, have the shutter go too long, or if they move too much, or if they move not enough, you're not getting the movement or the drag or the color drag that you want or that you need. And then also even, I did a mentoring session last week with a student who, this actually like warmed my heart. She's a college student. She said that she would go to my blog post and look at my lighting diagrams. And just, she started experimenting with the long exposure using my lighting diagrams. And I was like, oh my gosh, people actually read them. But then with that, I was able to see like, she was showing me her work, and I was able to go through with her and tell her, okay, well, you know, if you did this, like if you move the light a little bit off the background, then you're able to see more of the drag, and you're able to do this and able to do that. So with me being able to practice that and study it for such a long period of time, it's so easy for me now to, if I'm educating or if I'm teaching someone or if they're showing me their work, how I can tell them, oh, well, you know, if you try this, you can get this effect differently, or you can do this, or you can do that. So it was one of the toughest things for me to learn, but it was one of the most fulfilling projects that I've been able to actually work on and can kind of say that I kind of mastered it.
Yeah.
So touching on, you know, tough and difficult things, I often find we learn more from our failures. Have you had any, you know, failures or tough photo shoots that you'd like to share with us?
I mean, every photo shoot I feel like is tough, especially when I would always tell people, you know, when you're working with a client, the experience on a photo set is much different than when you're working on your own personal project, because not only are you photographing for yourself, but you're photographing for everyone else's eyes. So usually what a campaign I did last year, they had the client on set, then the art director, and then the models. And so everyone was on set looking at the images, and everyone had a different critique. And it's like, hey guys, we're trying to get one, you know, for me, I had to realize, you know, you can't please everybody, but just focus on the client, you know? So whatever the client needs, and not allow everyone else's ideas to kind of cloud what it is that you need to create, because it's so easy to start overanalyzing and start dwelling on it. And then for me personally, if everyone's giving me all this input and I can't process it quick enough, and we're in a photo shoot where we have a time period, where we have a time crunch, where the model has a hard out, you know, it's so easy to just get all flustered and then not know what to do. So for me, I had to realize, you know, in these moments and in these things where you can't control, focus on what you can control. I can control my reaction, my interaction with the client. I can make sure the client's happy, and then everyone else just find a nice way to be like, yeah, I'll try that later.
What, for your mental process, if you're on set for a client, is your team naturally pretty big? What does that team look like? Or is it rather small so that you can maintain a little bit more control?
Well, usually it depends. Like sometimes I would have 1 to 2 assistants, and then the glam team would either be provided by me or be provided by the client. So usually it just depends on what the client needs and how big of a space that we're shooting in. But I usually like to keep everything small and intimate because I feel like when you have too much going on, and if it's just one client with a friend or if it's just one person, you don't want it to seem to be so overwhelming, you know? So I usually try to gauge what my client, who my client is, what they're looking to do, what they're looking to create. Or sometimes I just like to do just things run and gun and just do it by myself. You know, so it usually just depends on the comfort level that I'm able to read based off of the conversation and also basing off of the need of the photo shoot. If it has to be excessive, where I need a team of five, or if it could just be minimal where it's just me or it's just me and assistant.
So speaking of the needs of your client, how do you, you know, go back and forth with the conversation? Because it's obviously not, oh, we just need one photograph. How do you kind of pick their brains and see what they're looking for and maybe try to elaborate on, oh, this might be a good idea, but we could shift things this way or that way?
With that, I definitely love to use a mood board because I think it's so easy for us to write out different ideas. But then it's so hard, especially if you're doing things via email, it's really so hard to gauge everybody's needs. You know, like I had, I got emailed a proposal for one job, but then when I went into the meeting, it was a whole different discussion. So it's just like understanding that some people, you know, when you're able to have like a real in-depth conversation of what their actual needs are, and then you're able to send them ideas and create a mood board so everyone knows by the time I leave, we already know what to expect from the images. We already know what everything's going to look like. We already know what the location looks like. So no one's left up in the wind and no one knows what's about to happen when they walk into the place.
Are these are these meetings in person? Or are they usually on phone? Are they via like Skype?
Each one's been different. Some has been over the phone, some has been in person, and some has just been strictly email. I haven't done any Zoom ones, but I feel like with everything that's been happening now, it's going to be more occasional.
Mm-hmm. So with these conversations that have been coming, have you noticed maybe that more people are asking for maybe additional video, or are they looking for, you know, we need this for print, we need this for social media, we need X amount of images? Have you noticed any change maybe in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years of what clients are asking for?
A lot of clients now are asking for more social media, and a lot of them also want video as well. A lot of people I've noticed have been looking to be able to get everything done in one shot. So whether it's doing photo and video in one shot, as well as, oh, well, it's not going to go for print, but it's just going to be for social. So the budget's smaller for this, you know, because, you know, social media has blown up to a way that I don't think anyone really predicted. You know, we knew that print was dying. You know, we knew that print was a dying breed, but we didn't know that social media was going to get to the point of where it is now. Because even now, more people are looking for images to post for social media than they are for print magazines or for anything like that, you know. So a lot of the conversation has been either looking for social media content and being able to have a quick turnaround time because it's for social media, or a lot of them want to know, hey, are we able to get, like one of my last jobs that actually got canceled because of this, we were doing a photo shoot and a commercial all in one day, and they wanted me to do both because they knew that I can do both video and photos. So it's been one of those things where I had to be thankful that I'm kind of been playing around and been working more in the video field for like the last 5 years. And it's allowed me to be able to stretch myself further than just strictly stills for jobs, and also being able to pitch more video as well.
How do you price your work? Do you adjust your rates based on the usage needs of like the publisher, or is it just kind of you have your flat creative fees, or what's that process?
Usually it's always, I usually like to stick to a flat fee, but knowing that everyone's needs are different, I always try to work within their budget, especially when it comes to usage, because usage is one of those things where you have to now really consider when you do get contacted by a client. So a lot of it just a lot of my jobs have been based on what their budget is, what they're looking to spend, and what their usage is. And then if it's too below what I'm expecting, then I can somewhat negotiate or try to figure out, okay, well, for this price, we can do X, Y, and Z. And then there are some jobs where they'll just be like, here's the price, not even the budget. Here's the price, and we want X, X, X. And then it's like, you either do it or you don't. So some of them, I actually prefer jobs like that, where they just give me, here's the price, here's what we need. Can you do it? Okay, let's go.
What kind of gives you more creative latitude, like the studio or locations?
I have to say locations. I think studio is one of those things where, you know, you can finesse, you can make something look different on a background, but on location, you have more freedom to roam around and do things that you typically wouldn't be able to do in studio. So I love being able to find random studio spaces, just find random locations and find ways of actually creating something or styling something in a way where, hey, you typically wouldn't see it like this, or you typically wouldn't photograph something in this location, and let's make magic.
I want to double back a little bit to talking about social media, and you have a pretty wide net of social media platforms, John. You have your website, Facebook, LinkedIn, now Skillshare, Instagram. What has been most beneficial to you so far?
Definitely Instagram, surprisingly. Instagram has been, when I was telling actually, one of the mentoring sessions I did last week, I was telling them, you know, a lot of people are afraid to use social media as that platform to network and to build relationships. But for me, it's been very, very beneficial because I've been able to build my team through social media. I've been able to get clients through social media. I've had athletes contact me because they see my work with another athlete through social media. And it's one of those things where it feels more, it's not as abrasive as sending out a cold email. You know, when someone follows you and you follow them back and they met you like, oh, you know, I'm really interested in XYZ. It makes the conversation a little bit smoother and a little easier. And then from there, I transfer them to email, of course. But for me, I definitely feel like social media has been one of the most beneficial things for me in terms of shooting and getting clients.
That kind of leads me. Sorry,
again. No, go ahead, Mike.
So that kind of leads me to my next question of, like, between social media, between cold emails, as you mentioned, phone calls, print promos, is how do you prospect to new clients? What's the ratio there?
Usually, honestly, a lot of my clients have been referrals and sending out promos. So usually, for instance, a job I did for a brand, one of the models who I photographed before, she actually told the art director that they should work with me. And then the art team contacted me and they're like, oh, so-and-so referred you. And then I end up doing a campaign for this athletic brand. So a lot of it has been networking, especially in LA. A lot, everyone knows everybody, which is very, very weird. It's like the circles, LA is a big city, but you start to realize like the circle is very, very small. So a lot of my jobs have really been through working on set and meeting somebody that's referred me to another job, or working with another photographer who can't do a job, so they referred it to me. Or then this brand working with this athlete and the brand contacts me to work with this person and that person. So it's been very, very interesting.
Kind of shifting that back to the virtual space, you mentioned you contact, you know, athletes you want to work with or other brands. Is that like organic where you're like, oh, I really like your work, you start liking some posts, or is there a strategy kind of for that?
Usually it's, for instance, like a lot of athletes that I've been able to build my portfolio with, I've either followed them or I've met them in person at some type of sporting event. Or I would just send them a cold email like, hey, I would love to work with you. Here's some examples of my work, X, Y, and Z. And then I've been able to build a lot of relationships just like that.
How much do you help like strategize with your branding clients? Like, do they tell you what to do, or are you kind of leading the creative charge? Like, how is that negotiated?
Usually it depends, but a lot of it is usually either a collaborative effort to where they tell me what their needs are and I send some suggestions their way, or some of them just come with me like, hey, we need this. You have free range to just create however. But it's one of those things where I love like the collaborative effort because I love being challenged. I love them telling me that they need X, Y, and Z, but they don't know how to execute it. Then I can come up with different ideas and different scenarios, and then we can collaborate and see which one works best or which one's more fitting to the brand and their story and their purpose, and then go from there.
So talking of collaborating with clients, you're a Buff ambassador for Paul C. Buff. How has that process been with you? Like, What's that kind of relationship like?
It's been awesome. We're actually, okay, I don't want to spill the beans, but it's been an amazing process. Actually, when they contacted me, I was caught so off guard. I was like, wait, you want me? But it's been an amazing process. Like they've definitely sponsored a couple of my workshops that I've done previously in LA where I've done, I actually did a long exposure workshop. I think it was the beginning of last year in LA. And they were one of the sponsors, and we were able to give away a free light to one of the attendees. We've been able to collaborate on a lot of different cool projects, and definitely it's been a slower process this year, but we're definitely looking forward to what's to come and what we're able to, how we're able to build back, because, you know, a lot of businesses have been affected by this. So even with them, they had to cut 50% of their staff, sadly. So it's really being able with us, for me personally, I've been able to try to strategize and find ways of how can, after this pandemic, what could we do to collaborate, to create, and what could we do to push more to be able to get those workers back into their office, you know?
Yeah. So just, so I get this clear. Did you say that they just like miscellaneously called you up? I'm just curious.
Yeah, they randomly sent me an email. They're like, hey, we would, we've seen your work. Cause what I would do before I even became an ambassador with them, I would always like tag them in my posts. I would always do behind the scenes photos and videos whenever I'm shooting and using their product. Cause I love their product. Their product's one of the, you know, I've worked with Profoto, I've worked with Broncolor, but for me, I liked Alien Bees because it's so lightweight, especially when I'm working on location. It's so easy to move around and it's so easy. It's lightweight. So for me, it's like, it's my workout, but I know that it's actually durable as well. So I just started using their product and I started loving it, started investing more in it and shooting more with it. And then when they contacted me, I was like, wait, me? They sent me a random email and I was like, of course I would.
That's awesome.
And so sticking on lighting and how you develop this kind of skill set, what is on a set, let's say on a location shoot, what does a minimalist setup look like for you? And what is a full boat bringing all the lights set up look like for you?
Minimal would be a one light, with the beauty dish, with the Vagabond, Vagabond power pack on location. The maximum I've done is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, a six light setup.
Okay. And is that beauty dish kind of your bread and butter? You love the beauty dish?
Yes, I do.
we all have our favorite modifiers.
Yes, the beauty dish is one of my go-tos. It looks good on the abs.
Speaking of a go-to, do you have a go-to camera setup lens combination that you like to work with?
I love the 70-200 2.8. That's my bad boy. That's my, you'll always see that in my hand first and foremost. That's always in my hand. And then I love it too. It's heavy too. So it makes my right bicep look a little stronger. So, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like my 70-200 just seems to be my workhorse that is always first choice. It looks good. I feel like, and it's very versatile.
It is. Oh my God. You could get some beautiful close-ups and you can get the distance. I just love it. And then, it's my favorite lens.
If you had to give people advice on where to kind of invest their money early on into photography, they want to kind of build their brand business, where would you lean them to? Would you lean them to the gear? Would you lean them to marketing? Would you lean them to productions and personal projects?
I would say personal projects. For me, I would say personal project and equipment. But I usually, whenever I'm working with people or they're coming to me for advice and they want to buy a new lens or they want to buy this, I would always tell them first, do you actually understand your tool? Because a lot of people I've realized they'll see something like, oh, I heard this lens is sharp, but they don't even know how to work the kit lens. You know, they don't understand how the shutter speed works, how the aperture and how the f-stop works. So for me, it's always making sure that people understand their tool first and foremost. That's the very, very first thing I always try to tell people. And then with that, you know, shooting your personal projects, it gives you that project to work on to actually, you know, hone in on your skill set, but also hone in on your style. So for me personally, like the project I did with the retirement project with the Olympian, that was the first time I actually was able to spend like day and night with an athlete, seeing their workout, seeing their recovery, seeing all these different things. And I was able to create my style and be able to do something different. And from there on, I was able to shoot other Olympians and shoot other professional athletes, and being able to focus and hone in on knowing this is my style on this end if I'm doing the documentary style work, but then I also have my studio style. So I always would tell people, you know, the personal project, when you're following your passion and you're creating and you're photographing something that you actually enjoy, you're able to not learn just about your camera and your tool, but you're able to learn what it is that you actually like and what it is that you actually would love to create. And you're able to find the jobs and you're able to find a clientele that feeds that need as well.
Do you think it's important to try to, like you said, find that niche early on and like really focus on one thing, or, you know, expand your horizons and just like try to get your hands on being able to shoot anything and everything you can?
So I used to be the person that shot everything I could. And then I got to the point where I realized, because I was shooting everything I could, I wasn't getting the jobs I wanted. I was getting the other jobs that I didn't want, but that I was just still shooting because I knew I could shoot it, but I wasn't getting the jobs that I actually wanted. So I would always tell people, you know, find it what it is that you love. Like, everyone, for some odd reason, people contact me for weddings. I have no idea why. Literally every other month someone's contacting me for a wedding, and they're like, well, I just love your style and I just love the way, and I'm like, thank you, but no, like, no, I do not do weddings. And I'll just refer them to people. But, you know, it's one of those things where I always tell people, you know, you can try it out at first to see what it is. Like for me, like in college, I tried out everything. I tried out weddings, I did headshots, corporate headshots, all these different things. And from there I was able to understand I could shoot a headshot, I can shoot a wedding, but I know that I don't enjoy doing it, you know? And I'm not gonna lie, I shoot weddings once a year. And the only reason I do them is because weddings are one of the best workouts, and it's one of the best, it's one of the best things to actually understand your skill set, because as a wedding photographer, you're an event photographer, you're a documentary photographer, you're a portrait photographer, you know, so you're really able to understand all of the needs, and all, you're able to really break down, okay, with my camera, I can shoot this, with the flash, I can do this, I can do that. So I do one wedding a year, and it's usually a friend, it's usually someone I know, not a real client. But other than that, no, I don't do all that other stuff. But yeah, I would always tell people, you know, try to hone in on what it is that try to hone in on the type of jobs you want to get.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on that. Like, yeah, weddings really are a great workout. It's kind of, it's just journalistic. It's commercial. It's kind of editorial. You have all sorts of stuff that you got going on. For people that are having a hard time putting their, like, I would say, artistic fingerprint on their work, what advice do you have for finding that kind of style, that niche? Is it just iteration? Is it just keep getting your reps
in? I would say it's keep putting your reps in, but it's also finding inspiration. You know, for me, I have a lot of photographers that I look to, or a lot of photographers whose work I admire. And I would always try to figure out, okay, this person has this style, this person has this style. How can I make their style my style? What is it something, if I'm going to another project, how can I take this light? Like, for instance, when I was interning in Atlanta, I had one of the best mentors who's a lighting genius. And every photo shoot, I would write out the lighting diagram. And then that night or the next day, I would do a photo shoot with someone and I would use his lighting diagram, but then I would start adjusting it to make it more of mine. I would start playing with this, like, let me add a gel here, let me raise this light up. And then from there, I was able to understand how every light, how all the lights work together. But then I was able to understand, okay, well, you know, for my style, I like the contrasty look. And then if I want to get these action images, I need to do this with the light, I need to do that. So it takes a lot of mixing up, not just what you're passionate about and not just repetition and shooting constantly, but also taking inspiration from everywhere else and seeing what your eye gets drawn to first, and then being able to figure out, okay, well, how can I make this my own?
Yeah, like when I look at your portfolio, I'm always kind of impressed, because you mentioned that you love the contrast and kind of the hard, edgy, but you also have like this effervescent quality where it seems also very accessible and soft and almost commercial. How do you kind of find that balance of making something really impactful, edgy-wise, but also kind of glamorous and beautiful?
So that was one of the things where I knew, like, when I got into sports, one of the things when I got to, especially photographing women, I never wanted to sexualize an athlete. I never wanted to sexualize a model or anything like that. So I, especially with me being a woman myself, I always had to think about how would I want to be represented. So of course, you know, you want them to be strong, you want them to be fit, but how can you still make them look strong, but still make them look feminine and soft at the same time? So for me, I started experimenting more with being able to create, like you said, like the contrasty look, but then also creating like the soft look to where they still look fit, but they don't look, you know, especially as a woman, oh, well, you're fit, but you're too muscular and you're too this, you're too that. How can I create that nice balance and using lighting to achieve that?
Speaking of balance and kind of motivation, on your blog, you have a lot of Motivation Mondays, Women Crush Wednesdays, Flashback Fridays. How do you, you know, stay so consistent and how do you find these images? Do you have an archive or is it just kind of spur of the moment this popped into my head?
Usually it's whenever I do work, I would put in, I would just figure out, okay, you know what, I love this part about this photo shoot, or I love this about this person. And I have a lot of archive work that I haven't put out. So for me, it was just my opportunity and my chance to really break down my lighting that I did in this photo shoot, or, you know, I really enjoyed this about this session. Let me talk about this and let me push this. And just, it's usually, a lot of it's at random. It's none of it's really planned.
You mentioned that you have a lot of archive work. Do you use metadata or do you have like an archiving system that you
use? Yes, I'm very, very, I'm very organized. Like all my hard drives, all my backup drives, everything is coordinated by date. Everything is coordinated by the client. So I know, like, for instance, I got contacted for someone wanted to license some images from a job I did in 2016. And luckily, because I'm so organized, I already knew what hard drive it was. I already knew where I could find the photo. So I would always tell people that, you know, be as organized as you can, especially when it comes to images. Because, you know, for me, I know I photograph a minimum 200 images a shoot. And I never want to lose any of it. And you just never know how you can use them, how you can utilize them later on in the future, especially when it comes to licensing, you know, work never dies. So really being able to archive everything and really being as organized as I can. And I always try to stress that with everyone as well.
This brings me to a great point here, because I think a lot of this notion of licensing is kind of foreign to a lot of amateur photographers, people starting out. Could you walk us through what process you use for if somebody comes to you and says, hey, we love your picture from 2016, we'd love to use it, what that process is
like? So usually, like, I'm actually in negotiation now. So this company contacted me, and because of this virus, they haven't been able to do the photo shoot that they needed to do for their branding. So they saw some of my images, mm-hmm. which kind of work with their brand and kind of work with the product that they're pushing out. So they contacted me for the images. So basically what I did was I sent them a collection of images that kind of work in with what, when they explained to me what their product was and what their brand was, I just sent them a collection of images based on what I thought would work for what their needs are and what their needs could be. They told me what how they want to use the images, whether it's on website, whether it's on social media, whether it's on the app. And then from there, I just sent them a price point for this amount. And then especially with some of the talent being signed models, being also, of course, you have to converse with their agent. You know, like a lot, I have shoots where I've done test shoots with models and then people would love to license those images. So of course, especially as a photographer, you definitely, before you license an image of somebody, you still have to make sure that you get, you go to their agent so that the person is getting their cut as well. So from there, it's just, yeah. Right. So I think, and that's something a lot of people forget. Like, you know, I've done stock photography as well with fitness and sports, but I always have to remind people who are interested in getting into that is to just make sure you get your photo release, of course, from the subject that you're shooting. But if they are assigned talent, you can't just send off their images to stock photos, you know. And a lot of people, we tend to forget that. We tend to think, oh, well, I photographed it, so I owned it. But if their agent directed you to shoot them, you don't own those images, especially of that person, because they get paid to be in an ad campaign. So you can't just put their images into a stock photography system and get paid from it, and they don't benefit from it either.
And is the agent the person that's making the negotiations in terms of what the percentage would be if this image does get licensed? It's like, you know, are you assigning that? Who makes
those
decisions?
So the agent's making the decision based on the image of, the agent is making the decision for their talent. So I would add that along with my fee, it will be my fee to license the image plus the model's fee would be this part. So I'll give them a full sum still including my licensing fee and the model's licensing fee.
Gotcha. So when you do your personal projects, is this just more collaborations? Is there, are the models being paid? Are you paying for that out of pocket, out of your own kind of need to create?
So some of them depend. Like a lot of some of my personal projects, I've been able to just have an amazing team where I've said, hey guys, this is my idea. I would love to work on this type of project. And for me, I always try to tell people when you're collaborating with people, collaborate with people that you know your work's going to be beneficial for. Like I'm not going to, I wouldn't collaborate with a makeup artist that does weddings because my work wouldn't do anything for their book. You know, so always, I always try to find people that are either like-minded or they want to create this type of work. So when I'm doing these collaborations, a lot of them are like, okay, well, you know, I do want to shoot for Shape magazine or I want to shoot for ESPN. So then I collaborate with those type of people because I know that the work that we're going to create is going to be beneficial to both parties. And if I know it's not going to be beneficial, then I'll pay people, you know. But then a lot of it I do invest. I mostly invest my everything for myself, like the studios I'm renting, the equipment I'm renting out. Sometimes I'll pay my crew. Sometimes I'll pay the people, the subject. And it's just all about depending on what the project is, but also just making sure when I'm doing a personal project, I want to make sure that everyone's leaving this project satisfied with the content that we're creating and that it's not just beneficial to me.
I was going to ask you if you rented out your studios or if you owned a studio, because I would imagine at some point you probably considered, man, I shoot a lot in the studio. Maybe I should just own one.
You know, so I never wanted a studio because I felt like a studio was going to keep me still. Now at because of this whole coronavirus, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to open up my own studio within the next year. But yeah, I do a lot of renting out studios. But now I'm in the point to where it's like, okay, it's time to get a space.
Right. Talk to us about your new branding. I read that you changed it across all your platforms. So one, what was that process like? And then two, what was the motivation behind it?
The motivation for me, it's just, there's a comes a point where I feel like for me as an artist that you continue to grow and you continue to, become more of who you want to be and more of where you want your work to go and what you want to be remembered for. So I started pushing the more Be Troford because I knew I wanted to push the Be Fearless, you know, and I wanted everything to intertwine. And then the crazy things like with Paul C. Buff, the light that I primarily use is the alien B. So, you know, I really wanted to push this B movement, you know, the I have a B tattoo on my wrist, right. Like A bee. And for me, it's like, you know, a bee symbolizes community, a bee symbolizes prosperity, and a bee symbolizes joy. And that's something that I always want to be able to push. I want to be able to build a community of artists, build a community and build a network where we're all pushing positivity and we're all pushing happiness and joy. So that was one of the main thoughts when it came to me wanting to rebrand and wanting to redo my website and do all these things, but really making sure that everything intertwines together. And when you see one thing, you'll think of the other thing.
When going back to kind of your mood boards, you know, you mentioned, how do you prepare your mood boards? Are you just pulling from stuff that you've created before? And what would you advise to people that don't have that catalog of a library that they can do? Do they just pull from other photographers just to show the client?
Yes. So my mood board usually consists of my images or it'll consist of other photographers' images. I love, love, love the save feature on Instagram because whenever I see work from some of my favorite artists, and I always tell people, follow photographers that you love. I'm always following photographers' work and I'm always commenting, I'm always liking, I'm always saving, like, oh, I'm going to try this out, but I'm going to try to make this better, or I'm going to try to do this, or I'm going to try to do that. So I would always, especially based on the client's need, it's so much easier when you're able to put together a mood board. Like even for me, my mood boards would usually have like the hair is going to be styled this way, the makeup's going to look like this, and you know, and then the lighting's going to look like this, the location looks like this. Really being able to give everyone that experience of what to expect going into this photo shoot and not being afraid to use everyone else's work, you know, especially it's just for a mood board. It's not like you're copying the images, but you have these images of inspiration so people know what to expect.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's just a real quick good point of it's not like, yeah, you're copying ideally like the pose and everything. She's like, no, this is a great photograph. I love the style. I love the energy of it. Like, why wouldn't you want to you know, take off.
Right. And especially, you know, with some action poses, you know, for me, a lot of, I realize like working with some people, being able to direct and being able to show them what a pose looks like is so much easier than just saying, hey, can you jump in the air and do this with your right hand? But if you're able to have the photo reference, yes, they're able to look at it and then they can actually, okay, this is what they're doing in the image and they can actually do it for themselves versus you trying to like, okay, well, put your right hand here and then do this and do that. And then everyone gets confused.
Who are some of your favorite photographers? Like, is there a couple that just jump out to you that has always been a consistent source of inspiration?
Yes.
To you?
So my favorite photographer is Carlos Serrero. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. He's shot, oh my gosh, some of the most amazing portraits in the world. He has this photo with Giannis Antetokounmpo. I don't know how to pronounce these people's names. He plays for Milwaukee. And he has, it was one of the ESPN portraits he has of him. And he has like, it looks like they're, you know, he's known as the Greek god. So he has like these Greek columns and he has the Greece flag flying next to him. It's just, his work is just always so amazing. And he does video as well. So he's one of the people who I look at his work on a constant and being able to see how he's able to transition his photographic style into his video is one of my biggest inspirations. Cause even with me moving more into video is trying to figure out, okay, how can I translate my colors and my actions and all these different things into my videos? So when you see my videos, you're seeing the same exact work, but just in motion. So he's one of the number one people I always look up to. The second person would be Derek Blanks, who's my mentor. He's a photographer that I work with in Atlanta, who's a lighting genius. He actually, he had this series called the Alter Ego series where he would photograph a person in multiple outfits in the same image. And he was actually one of the people that taught me Photoshop and taught me how to actually be able to take over an image in Photoshop and how you can replicate or you can duplicate anything. And he's an amazing editor, amazing photographer. And those two are my go-to.
Speaking of Photoshop and retouching, what's a little bit of your process like? Do you just see the image and you're like, oh, I just want to touch these things up? Or do you go into a shoot knowing maybe later on I'm going to be able to touch this stuff up?
Usually I don't like to go into a photo shoot thinking, okay, well, I could just edit that out. So usually on set, I would try to remove everything that I can in terms of if there's something wrong with the hair, if there's this or if there's that. But then I do have, and then even with my editing, I got to the point where I know I can edit too much and I know I can edit just enough. So I'm now at the point, especially when it comes to creating client work, I always like my images to look real. You know, I got one time actually a fitness trainer contacted me and they weren't as in shape as they wanted to be and they wanted me to photograph abs on them. Now I can do that. But then for me, it got to the point of like my morals and it's like, okay, well, if you're selling this and you're trying to promote that you're a fitness trainer and you're going to get clients off of this, but it's not how you look like, I can, for me as a to me, that's moral code. And it's like, I can't really do that because I'm not selling the truth, you know? So for me, even with my editing, I always try to be as true to the subject at hand. Like, I don't want to photograph them to where they look completely different. They don't look like themselves. I try to make it look as realistic as possible, as natural as possible. And I try not to tweak it too much, although I can if I want to. But for me personally, I try to do things just enough to where it looks clean, it looks edited, but it doesn't look overly retouched. Oh, that's a Photoshopped image, you know?
What kind of makes a good fitness or unique fitness portfolio? You've seen a lot of them now. What are some of the trademarks that really stand out to
you? For me, it's when you can, usually it's a lot to do with the subject. You know, I feel like there's a lot of people who just have a personality or they just have an essence or they have something about them. And when you're able to photograph that and when you're able to tell that story in some way, to me, that's what makes an amazing image, you know, because, you know, I wouldn't say everyone could get abs, but a lot of people can get in shape, you know, but how can you make this person who's in shape, how can you make them look this way? Or how can you make them look that way? How could you see this picture and makes you want to go and start to do a workout? You know, so for me, it's always about the action. It's about the subjects. And even for me, I used to love when GQ would do the sports edition where they'll have like the fashion looks with the athletes, but you'll always see the athletes doing something out of the ordinary, like how they have who was it? I think it was LeBron James, and he was dunking on a mini basketball hoop. So things like that, to where it's still you're still able to see the athlete doing what they do, but it's in such a creative and such a different way, to where it brings humor, it brings life, it brings joy, and it just makes you smile.
What has been your experience being a woman growing in this industry been like for you? I would imagine it's overly positive for you just because you're such a positive person, but are there hurdles that go into that? And what would you advise for young female photographers kind of coming into the industry?
There's definitely hurdles. And it gets to the point where I knew for me, I started working with this photographer, and we were working for Under Armour during the summers, and we're photographing like all of their basketball stuff. And because we were working with the Under Armour basketball camps, which was predominantly men. So when you're working on these sets, and when you're working in these environments where it's predominantly men, and you're 1 in 5 women, it gets very uncomfortable, you know? So for me, I had to get to the point to where I realized, where I had to not let it get to me and not let it infuriate me. And as well, I have lost some jobs because I was a woman and I got hit on by a client and I didn't like that, you know? So I think for a woman, for younger women out there, it's one of those things where, one, definitely find other female photographers that you can actually console to or talk to about different situations. Like for me, I have a lot of women in my corner that if I'm in a situation, or if I was emailed or text something that I felt like was very disrespectful or something like that, I have these people that I can contact and, hey, how would you go about this situation? Or how would you do this? Or how would you conduct yourself in this situation? And just really finding ways to conduct yourself. And then even for me, it's one of those where, you know, I can't control someone else's actions, you know, especially with the men. So for me, I always try to stay as professional as possible in every situation. And for women who are very positive and very happy, some people take it as flirtatious. So for me, I had to find out, okay, if some people are taking this as flirtatious when I'm just being my natural self, how can I tone it down to where I know that I'm being as professional as possible? No one's getting any ideas or anything. And you have to be kind of like, one of my mentors was like, you have to speak with them as if you're another player in the field. So if someone's coming at me one way, I would come at them in another way, to where they know, do not try nothing, or don't try, like, don't do anything out of the ordinary, or don't, that's not cool, you know? So, and you know, it's one of those things where it's a tough situation to be in, and it sucks to be in it when you're just like, oh man, well, I may just lost this client because this person was interested in me, you know? But for me, I just had to realize, you know, that's how the game goes in some situations, and it sucks in a lot of situations, but then I had to stay true to who I was, stay true to who I am, and also realize, hey, I'm a strong woman, and I shouldn't be defined by my looks, but I should be more defined by my work.
Yeah, that's awesome. And like, so much of this is communication based, right? I mean, it's so much, you know, how you work with people, and sometimes you're just going to end up getting kind of the wrong end of the deal. And it's just really interesting to hear people's perspectives on that. And as you, as a woman of color as well, I can't imagine that would have been necessarily as easy either. Could you explain some of your experiences?
Right, and it's like, it's one of those things to where a lot of people, so when people see my name at first, a lot of them don't know what to expect. So I've been in situations where I have came on set, and because I never used to have my photo on my website or anything like that. And I would come on set, and people, when I tell them, when I introduce myself, you can see the interaction, you can see their facial expression change. When it's just like, wait, you've been the person I've been speaking to? And it's like, yeah, I'm this person. And then for me, I just laugh about it, because, you know, I would always tell people, you know, when you get people in that predicament, they can't be as honest as they want to be. You know, you can see their facial expression change. But for me, it's my job to do my job, to do my job correctly, to do my job exceedingly well, to where you just have to shake off that feeling like, wow, I never would have guessed this was the person behind the camera, this person behind this job. But it actually ended up going better than I expected.
What personality trait of yours do you think has been your biggest asset as you've kind of taken this journey? And then on the opposite side, what do you think, which trait has been your biggest hindrance?
I think, I wouldn't say I'm an outgoing person, but on set, I'm an outgoing person. Like when I'm talking about, when I'm doing what I love, I feel like that's one of my, when my best trait comes out, because like even right now with us talking about art and photography, this is something I love to do and I could talk about it all day. And I think a lot of people are able to feel that connection, because even for me, I always tell people, you know, a photo shoot is an experience. You always want to make this an experience to remember, especially if it's someone's first photo shoot. I have a lot of people who have contacted me afterwards, like, this was such an amazing experience. I can't wait to do it again. So for me, it's one of those things to make sure that my interaction with every person I come in contact with, especially if it's a photo shoot or if it's just a meeting or whatever it is, to make sure that people feel like we've known each other for years and this is my homegirl and I can't wait to do this again, you know? And I think on the opposite end of that, I struggle with, that's a tough one. I think, well, for me, it's me being my toughest critic, because like in a lot of circumstances, I have not gotten an opportunity because I didn't go after it, or I haven't gotten an opportunity because I was too afraid to bid on myself, or I was too afraid to put out what I thought the budget should have been, or do all these different things, or I've lowballed myself in different situations. So I think that's one of the toughest things that a lot of people face as well. It's understanding your worth and not being afraid to put yourself out there.
So before we wrap this up, what would be one piece of advice you'd want to leave our listeners that are here today?
To be fearless. honestly, being fearless is one of those things that I always try to stress and I always try to live on a daily basis, because you never know what opportunity is going to come when you actually put yourself out there. You know, I've gotten jobs and I've gotten clients and I've built relationships because I just one day I was like, you know, I'm just going to send that email, just send it. And then I get a response, you know, or I'm going to pitch for this opportunity. And then you get a response, you know, and my cousin would always say, don't allow yourself to tell yourself no to a situation. So if you don't put yourself out there, you will never get the no from somebody else, but you never know if you'll get a yes. So to be fearless and to really put yourself out there and to really, one of my mentors, his name's Wayne Lawrence. He's an amazing photographer. He's done covers for Time Magazine and National Geographic, but he would always tell me, find a story to tell and photograph it. And that's one thing that I love to do. And the reason I photograph athletes, like, people always thought that I got into sports because I wanted to see abs and I wanted to see this and I wanted to see that. But the real reason I got into sports is not only because I played sports my whole life, but because working with these athletes on a consistent basis is one of my most motivations, because I'm able to see how these people dedicate their time. They're really dedicated to their craft every single day. So if they can go out and they can work out when there's no coach holding them accountable, or if they don't even have a game coming up and they're still trying to keep themselves in shape for this opportunity, I have no excuse to why I'm not doing the same thing with my craft. So that's why I love photographing these athletes, and that's why I love being able to motivate other people to be their best selves, no matter what their craft is, no matter what it is that their career takes them, to really be your best self and to strive to be your best self every day.
That is such a wonderful wrap up to this whole thing. I can't thank you enough. Is there anything that you would like to plug before we wrap this up?
No, I think we plugged everything.
All right, B, I just want to say once again, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for sharing this time with us. I hope you stay safe. And it looks like that's going to wrap it up for us today. If you guys have enjoyed the show, help us out by hitting that like and subscribe button with your favorite podcasting service. And if you're feeling extra generous, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a review on iTunes. We're also excited to promote our newest platform, media1099.com. It is the central hub in which you can find our episodes, blog posts, podcast notes, and much more. Once again, that's media1099.com. This is Robert Husky with Michael Durr, and we will catch you on the next episode.